So don't be scared off by the sources. We are not reading everything inside. This is just the entire Ma'amar, or at least whatever's found online, because it's easier to print. I don't remember the exact whole thing. But as I promised, I didn't want to just leave you with saying that, right, what we dealt with last time was, not the one-off Haggadah that we did, but the last thing we did with the Rambam is that, you know, what you're supposed to believe that Haggadah doesn't have to be literal, right? But someone at the time, and maybe it was you, I don't know, it was Beer, I don't know, right, said, wait a second, but that's not like everything, right? Like just 'cause it, right? Just because it isn't, just because it doesn't have to be literal doesn't mean it isn't literal, right? It doesn't follow. And as I said, well, the Rambam, at the end of the day, never wrote the systematic theorem on a goddess that he said he was going to do. And to be fair, neither did his son. But what Rambam did do is that he tried to categorize a goddess into its four sheets. I just printed out the whole Ma'amar for you. Moshe, it's four sheets. I printed out the whole Ma'amar. Again, we're not reading through the whole thing. I want you to have it in case you want to look at it, right? We'll try to cover it all today, right? Just like an overview. The basic Rambam and Rambam did was go through a Agadata and say, okay, this is what you need to know about a Agadata. These are the different types of a Agadata. These are when you know to take a Agadata literally. This is when you don't take it literally. And when you don't take it literally, these are what you should be looking for, right? It's a snapshot overview. The Ramchal has a shorter version where he does, you know, he also does some things like this. I'll decide whether we do it. I don't know. Last year we, where's Zach? He's not here. But last year we had Rabbi Cohen, Rabbi Tani Cohen from MTA, he gave a guest chair on Agadata and discussed Ramchal. Okay. So like I said, I just printed out the whole thing for you. We're not reading it all a million times. Not reading it all, right? But I want you to have it, okay? So this is his Ma'amar al-Drashot Chazal. So it starts off and he says, Da. Ki chol nimtza b'tamud v'zodo mi'chiburei chachamim zal ba'alei midrashot ma'afiyot. Anything you find in the Gemara or the Midrashim, divrei ha-psukim ha-nimtzim b'yadeinu atam me'atim v'ne'elamim me'inei kol ha-ogim b'tamud v'robei ha-v'parashim v'l'shochu b'em yadam v'lo ba'al nafshan b'sevda. Said the average person, even big Talmid Chachamim, when it comes to the drashot, and it comes to the drashot from the stories and all the agadot, the average person has no idea, even the average Talmid Chacham, has no idea what to do with them. Okay? And he says, and this is, I mentioned this last week, or last time, says, Va'avi Morizal, my father, named the Rambam, Chashav Chaber Sefer B'Perusham. He considered writing a all-inclusive commentary on Agadah, Kasher Zachar B'Tchila Perusha Mishnah, as the Rambam said himself in the introduction to the Mishnah. And then, quoting the Pasuk, he says, Ulbasof Natam Me'alav, in the end he turned away from it, Vayira Moshe Migeshet Eilav, Kasher Amar B'Tchila Amoreh. What is Vayira Moshe Migeshet Eilav? Exactly, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid to approach the burning bush. He said, Moshe was afraid to approach, so he turned away. He never did it. Meaning the Rambam panicked. The Rambam, apparently he wasn't afraid of writing a comprehensive parish on all of Halacha. He wasn't afraid of writing Mor Nevuchim, right? But he wasn't afraid of writing a parish Mishnah as a teenager, right? But writing a parish on Agadata, according to his son, that was too much. He will get up. What? Yeah, he couldn't do it. So he says, "Vaniach arpetirato pirashi binyan zema askat." So after the Rambam died, he said, "I, the Rambam, I interpreted a little bit. Vilona titi, I didn't turn away. Vibneishinit dasaki v'chibor asefer hazeh. Kiraiti tolzo gedola v'nemana v'avkala rishona." Because I said it's necessary, it's important, it's worthwhile, it's helpful. Afal pichein, ani me'ir l'chavra v'chava tapakeh v'akach eina cha al aderech hazeh shidru chachamim v'drashor nimtzan lem. So I'm going to turn your heart, and I'm going to tell you, open your eyes. V'menu kavanatam teik sofeh v'yeh l'cha l'ilukim, or l'ilukim, right, and look at their intention. Again, quoting the Pasuk, right? This will be your guide, right? Vatati Eli Flipem, meaning here is your guide, your Elohim, your leader, right? Where's this from? Aaron, Moshe, right? Right, and you will be my mouthpiece, meaning I'm giving you the tools. I'm giving you the tools, and now you'll figure it out. And that will prevent you from making fun of the sages and denying it. Right? Remember group two from the Rambam? Right? You won't be that group. And you'll also prevent from being group one and thinking that every crazy thing is actually happened is in a miracle that you must believe. That every chassid, every chacham has miracles and all sorts of things going on. And you'll think there's no difference between Yamsuf and Elisha and Eliyahu and whatever. Right? Meaning if you took the Agadah literally, you would think everyone is as great a Navi as Moshe Rabbeinu. Because every person, you open every daf and brachot, right? Well, he can control the shaitim, and he can figure out the moment at which God is angry and destroy, all his enemy. I mean, like, right, everybody apparently has superpowers. All pinyarem and lechatzkila binyan rishon. V'daya alanu balaro chiesh min rishon ma'atiyot shalem minyan pinimim. Nistar chutz min anachit pinyarem. He said, I could have sufficed and just said, there are agadot and midrashim that have more than meets the eye. I could have just said that. The call she came by Meshi Gila Abba Moriz Abba Chirobiza, and I could definitely have just said, look at my father. And listen to what he said. Three ways of understanding Agadah. Rulule ki chavsi ritzoni l'osivcha beir l'odiyacha ma'asim b'chiluk inyanehem shani mechalik l'alcha b'karob. But I had a desire to be organized. Like very my idea. And I needed to divide things for you. I need to categorize Agadah for you. So that's his first point of introduction, okay? Second point of introduction is, and again, this particular version that's on the Da'at website, which is very helpful, is very good for skimming because it has a nice little title, right? So we can hopefully manage to get through this in one shot. So the next point he wants to make is, Ein lahamin b'davar rak biglal omro. Right, the first thing you got to figure out when you're reading Agadah or anything, but definitely in Agadah, is what does that mean? Ein la'min b'davar rak b'glal omro. What does that mean? Because of. Don't believe something just because of who said it. Right. The first thing you got to, if you want to understand Agadah, you can't just believe it because Chazal said it. Da. If you accept something without trying to figure it out, and you just say, well, a great person said it, it must be true, right? That's bad. The Torah is against it, and rationalism. It's just wrong, and right, it's just not smart. Right? It's not what your head tells you to do. Because it now makes you, right, believe, add and subtract from beliefs that are proper to believe, right? It's just like, well, that makes no sense, but I'm going to believe it. And, right, right, you just end up believing the wrong things. And in Torah, you end up in the wrong place. And then in the next pasuk, the next paragraph here, he says, again, I'm going to skim a little bit. He says, and God says, what's the rule in judgment? Lo tisa p'nei dal, lo derdar p'nei zakeh, which p'nei gadol, but it says it goes to both. You don't show favoritism to the poor or the rich. You always try to figure out what's true. Right? And therefore, he says, why is he telling you that here? Which group is he polemicizing against here? What? No, group one. Right, group one of the Rambam, right, who said that, exactly, that is the next paragraph. He says, don't say, well, the Chachamim were so great, and therefore, everything they said about the Torah, and therefore, what are you going to be doing? Listening to them and everything. You're going to follow their science. You're going to follow their medicine. Right? No! Don't do that! Right? The Gaonim already yelled about this. Don't follow the medical advice in Chazal. Don't. Don't do it. Okay? Good. I hope that was clear. Don't do it. I remember when I was learning Gittin in YU, my first year in YU, someone asked for Schefter, and he said in the beginning of the seventh parak in Gittin, there's two blot of all the medical advice from Chazal, and so someone asked for Schefter whether you should learn it. He said, no. They're like, if we skip it, can I make a seum on Gittin, having never read it? I said, yes. It's just not Torah. It's just not. It was the medical advice at their time. It's wrong. Move on. Right, yalla, skip it, move on.
Can we use the advice on how to
punish
demons?
Go ahead. I'm terrified. Oh, no. Are you going to use Chatuli? That's going to be your cat to figure out whether there's demons around, you know? The placenta of a firstborn. I mean, oh, God. Please. The ashes of a cat.
The theory is that Chatuli is actually... Sure.
Okay. Right, and then in the next paragraph, he says, what do the Chachamim themselves say? They say radical things like, if you look at the quote, Ha'elokim, Ilu Amra Yeshua Ben Nun Lo Tzai Tzinin Le. This appears every so often in Chazal, which is, even if Yeshua Ben Nun would say that, I wouldn't believe it. He's like, Chazal didn't do this. Right? Chazal said, there are certain things, if they're wrong, I don't care who tells me it. I don't care if it's Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Or Yeshua. Okay, that's the actual quote. Right, I don't care if Yeshua would tell me, I wouldn't believe it. Meaning, I don't care if you're a prophet. Certain things, they don't make sense. You don't believe them. Right, and he's pretty clear, and he's saying, even if the person is an actual prophet, right, there's still limits to what they can say. What? Well, that's exactly his point. His point is that in the end of the day, you have to use your mind. Right? You have to use your mind. Right? And if things, right, at some level, right, you have to use your mind. Right? And if things sound impossible, then they might just be. Yes. I didn't say it wasn't a radical line, but it's a line that's found all the time in the Gemara. And all the time in various, not all the time. It appears. Fine. And therefore, basically what he says, right, is So his first comment was just talking about Agadah and how difficult it is. His next claim to understand Agadah is you can't just believe people because how great they are, right? Definitely not at first glance. Remember, he's going to hold like his father that you should try to understand the Agadah, right? But you shouldn't be cowed into accepting his literal explanation just because, oh, it's Rava. I mean, Rava is great. Don't get me wrong. Rava is amazing, right? But that should give you reason to believe that what he's saying is meaningful and not, right? Yeah, right? When we were doing Avodah Zarah, I one of the first agadot I did is a
2 weeks.
What? Yeah. We did Avodah Zarah 3 years ago. We did the Gemara of Bar Shesha, which is literally a Gemara where, I think, is it Rava or is it Ruzera? Rav and Rashezach, whatever it is have a conversation with this non-Jewish officer named Bar Sheshach, and literally, this is how the story goes, and I don't know how you could take it literally, right, is he goes to visit Rashezach while he's naked, surrounded by naked prostitutes dancing around him, right, this is the scene of the Agadah, and Bar Sheshach says to him, do you have such beautiful women in your Gan Eden? And Rava says, yes, we have more beautiful women, and it's even better because we don't have Shibud Malchiot, and we're not afraid of the government. And Rav Sheshach says, what do you mean? I'm not afraid of the government. And at that moment, the king sends a messenger and takes Rav Sheshach and kills him. I mean, like, what? I mean, you can't look at that Agadah and say, aha, yeah, I mean, like, what do you want from me? I mean, like, honestly, you know, like, what is going on in that Agadah until you realize... As one of my rabbis once pointed out, it starts to make sense when you realize that Sheshach is Akbash of Bavel, right? Right, Sheshach is just, right, Bavel is, right, one of the classic code ones, Akbash, right? Mm-hmm. Ralph is Tuf and Bet is Shin, right? So Sheshach is Bavel, right? So then you realize that there's a metaphorical conversation between Bnei Yisrael and Bavel, right? Oh, suddenly that, you know, you can start talking about what does it mean and what's the, you know, value of, all right, hedonism, and then it starts to, right? But like, right? Okay. So that's the first point. Second point is that you also should believe, like his father says, you should believe too, believe even non-Jewish thinkers when they say things that are right. Right? That's what he says. Na'amin la'aristo rakva divrei shebo b'mopei. He said you should believe Aristotle if he proves something, right? He said you should believe him, but not always. Right? I mean, right? On the one hand, you don't reject everything from non-Jewish sources. On the other hand, you don't accept it blindly and then try to shove the Torah into it. Right? The point is, if something is objectively true, then it's true no matter who said it. And if something is objectively not true or not literal, then you don't understand it that way. Right? So don't say, well, Aristotle said it. I'm going to reinterpret everything in Chazal in light of Aristotle. That's also wrong. Right? But don't reject Aristotle either all the time. Right? He says, if he proved that mofet in medieval Hebrew doesn't mean a miracle, it means with absolute clear logic. Right? Because he believed in the world's eternity. Right? And we don't. Right? That's the Rambam's example also. Right? If you want a very nice discussion of this, you can ask Reb Ginsburg to borrow the book Zero. He suggested I read it, and then Zero, the history of Zero. It's a history of Zero. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's a philosophical and mathematical history of Zero with a chapter on medieval Jewish philosophy, on why it is that Jewish and Muslim philosophers had no problem with accepting Zero, and Greeks did, because Greeks didn't like Zero, right? They didn't like Zero. They didn't like irrational numbers. Right, because they believed in the eternality of the world, they didn't believe in such a thing as a starting point, right? And Jews do, and therefore we were theologically able to accept zero, and that's why, right? Zero entered mathematics through the right Western mathematics through the Arabs, right? Through the Muslim mathematics. It's a fascinating chapter, as opposed to the Greeks who worshipped math and couldn't stand zero, right? They were crazy, right? When it came to math, they were insane, right? The Pythagoreans were. It's not just that. It's when the person who discovered irrational numbers, they forced him to commit ritual suicide by jumping off a boat into the ocean because they worshipped numbers, and therefore by irrational numbers, it was like heresy against the numbers. I mean, they were really crazy. Okay. Fine. So then he says, next point, look at the next subtitle. Chachamim chazru b'hem nudivrehem. And he says, by the way, another thing you have to remember when you talk about a goddess is that Chazal themselves are capable of changing their minds. Right? Meaning you don't have to think they're perfect and can never get something wrong, right? And definitely that they have to take everything literal because they also think they made mistakes. Right? Okay. With that as his introduction, now if you go to the Chilak HaDrashot, he says, so now, with all that in mind, and why it's justifiable to not understand things literal, in fact, it's mitvakesh, that you have to understand things in context and the like, he says, okay, so what is this thing we call agadata? So here he divides it into five categories. Okay? Achelek harishon. What is the first step? And this comes exactly to Tibir's point, which is, just because we say that things aren't literal, doesn't mean all of them. It's talking about a very specific type of agadata. So what are those? So he says, well, listen, there's different types. Type one. Achelek rishon michalkei drashot hachamisha hem drashot al-pi pshutan. Lo nitkaven bahem davar echad zulat hapshat. V'anireh b'nei ha'okim. He said, there is a category of agadata, which, how should it be understood? What does this mean? Drashot al-pi pshutan. Exactly as they sound. Lo nitkaven bahem davar acher zulat hapshat. It means nothing except what it seems like it says. So there are agadot that aren't metaphorical, they're not symbolic, they are exactly what they sound like. Now, what's amazing to me is the example he picks. Because, you know how to certain things are to certain people is obvious and to other people is definitely not obvious? Right? Or, as I once heard from Rabbi Jaster, but I think it didn't originate with him, right? Which is, one man's reductio ad absurdum is another man's inachanami, right? So, what's his example of the agadata you should take literally? is Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Look at the right indented part. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Asur LaAdam Shemalik Sog Piv VaOlam Hazeh Shemar Azim Malik Sog Pinu. It is usher for you to fill your mouth with laughter in this world, because it says us then in the future, in the time of Mashiach, our mouths will be filled. Of all things to say that that's absolutely literal, which many of the posts can think it's not. But he actually thinks, no, that's exactly what it means, that you shouldn't be fully happy. Just don't be, right? So, just don't do it. Oh, right, we're learning bracha this year. I get to teach the Zagarata. Oh, that's so exciting. I love the Zagarata. It's wild. It's wild. And all the commentaries on this are absolutely wonderful. I haven't taught this Zagarata in its full in a very long time. Oh my God. When did I teach this? I'm going to say I think I taught it Shavuot night, maybe like 2010, maybe when I was like in college in Staten Island. Ooh, that's fun. It's great. I got it done. Of course, there definitely are people. I've taught parts of it. Okay. So, but first category, with the caveat, are the things that should be taken literally. Of course, the problem is always what one person takes literally, someone else does not. Hachelek HaShemi, second example. Hadrashot Yeshmen Chitzon Upanim. Are those Agadot that have an outer shell and an internal shell? V'akavanah hiyot enyana penimi v'lo enyana chitzon hapshati. But sometimes something has an inner meaning and an outer meaning, and the only thing that is meaningful is the inner meaning, right? But we put a shell on it for a great purpose. Now, what do we call this in English? A metaphor. Right? Right? A metaphor. Right? Or parable or fable. Right? Exactly. Right? Meaning a fable. Right? In a fable, the point of the story is just the lesson. Right, a parable, a mashal, right? The metaphor, again, right? Certain idioms are like that, right? It's raining cats and dogs means it's raining. It does not mean there is literally no value to imagining what it would be like if felines and canines were falling from the sky. There's just no meaning to that, right? So certain types of ragas, he said like that. They are metaphorical, and the only thing that they mean is whatever the inner meaning is, right? Not the outer meaning at all. Example, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Atid HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lasot Macholat Tzadikim. Amazingly, again, right, remember, we saw this Bali Tosfot, which one did they seem to take literally? The Tzadikim sit around in a circle and point to God. His example of something that has literally no literal meaning and only is a parable for something else is that same Gemara. Right, which of course this is always the problem that I got to tell. What one person says that's obviously literal, the other one says, well, you don't even need to tell me that obviously has no literal value whatsoever. But that's an example, right? That Atira Kadosh Baruch Hu Lasot Mechol LaTzadikim B'Gan Eden will make Beinehem, that the Tzadikim will make a circle around God, Golachad Echad Mareh Be'etzba, and everyone will point with their finger, Shneamar V'Amar Bayom Ahu Inei Elokeinu Zeh Kivinu Lo V'Yoshienu Zeh Elokeinu Kivinu Lo Negilam Nisachav Yishatav. And he says, you need pshat drasha ze yarchik, ki baal kol baal seichel. Anyone with a head on their shoulders, b'chol baal aminam in amino, or anyone who has any faith, will not believe this literally at all. Meaning all the baal tzotzot, just out. Right? V'anyan ha'emiti, what it really means, in its kaveh nalav, Rabbi Elazar, shesharon tzadikim nizkin l'chayelam haba. What it means is that what is the reward that tzadik can get in the world to come? Who has tagatam me'ashem mitzvarach ma'shaloyim asigim b'olam hazeh b'shem panim, is that they get to perceive God in a way they didn't in this world. V'zeh tachlid ha'tovah she'em amali menu. And there is no greater good than that. V'im shil simchat ha'asagah yitke simchat machol. The joy of that is like a circle dance. Right? Like at a wedding. V'chein damas simchat kol achad v'chad ma'shaloy yachol asig p'chilat meni tzvarach v'kol achad ma'reh alav b'asbo. And it's a personal joy symbolized by everyone pointing. Right, and it talks about how human beings will be saved by God with the world v'yoshienu, and how there will be honor and glory by saying we will rejoice in His salvation.
Rabim.
Right? So category one are things that are exactly what they sound like. Category two are things that sound not exactly what they sound like at all. They're completely metaphorical. Now, again, the irony that you have to keep in mind, Agadah, is it's very nice to say in principle there are things that should be taken literally and things that should obviously not be taken literally. But as we just saw, the one that he takes absolutely literally, most posts can say, that is not. And the one he takes is obviously not literal. The Balei Tosfot seem to have taken literally, which is, of course, you know, mildly disastrous. Third category is it means exactly what it says, meaning it's right, but even the pshat is unbelievably complicated. So it's not metaphorical, it's just complicated. Okay? So category one is it means what it says, and what it says is simple. Category two is it doesn't mean what it says at all, it's completely metaphorical. Category three is it means exactly what it says. There's no metaphor, it's just hard to understand. Okay? It would be like if I talked to you in Latin, right? I mean exactly what I said. You just have no idea what I just said, unless you're fluent in Latin. No. No, neither am I. In case you thought I was, I'm not. Hachelek ha-shlishi derashot she'in lam inyan panimi. Right, the third type are drashot that they have no inner meaning. Right, they're ela kavanat omram derech shudam dovat. Ela shidyot pshat drashot elu vidbanuto kashemaod arubei ha-minanim ad sof yuvan. Right, they mean exactly what they say, but most people cannot, for the life of them, figure out what that is supposed to mean. Okay? V'in yuvan yet tchunat inyano chaserah shlo karaui. I mean, he said sometimes what will happen is and sometimes they're so complicated that people get them wrong 180 degrees, right? But again, not because it's metaphorical, just because it's hard, right? Just because it's hard. You know, you ever had that? A hard Gemara? It's not trying to be metaphorical. You have no idea what it says. He says there are things like that, okay? His example is Rigzu, this is also in Brachot, yay! Rigzu v'altechetau, right? Tremble and do not sin. V'im nitzchu mutav. And if you are victorious over the Yetzer Hara, great. V'im lav. And if you are not victorious over the Yetzer Hara, yikra kriyat shma. You should say shma. Shneemar al mishkavchem. Because the continuation of the pasuk is on your bed. V'im nitzchu. If you beat the Yetzer Hara by saying shma, mutav. Great. V'im lav. And if not, yizkor yom ha-mitav. And think about death. The day of death. Shneamar v'domusela. So he says, "Hinei zeh lo nitkavin ela pshuto, ach zonot apshat kasheh, mibnei kirot yitzer tov yitzer ha nelama." He said, listen, it means exactly what it says, right? But it's getting into what the Yetzer Hara is and what the Yetzer Tov is, and that's like very hard to figure out. Like, what is the Yetzer Tov? What is the Yetzer Hara? Right, and then in the next paragraph he explains, well, Yetzer Tov refers to wisdom, and Yetzer Hara refers to bodily desire. And what it's telling you is that you need to shake your, right, you need to basically shake yourself into letting your mind overpower your desire. And if that doesn't work, you should say Shema. Why should you say Shema? So he says, because Shema reminds you about love of God, right? And therefore, and the last paragraph of Shema specifically talks about avoiding desire. So between reminding you about loving God and how important it is to avoid sin, Shema will help. And if that doesn't work, then you should think about death, because when you think about death and the end is where man ends up, it will break your Yetzer Hara, right? So he said, so again, first three categories, simple, and, right, pshat, it means exactly what it says, and it's easy to figure out. Second, completely metaphorical. Three, it means what it says, but it takes a lot of work to figure out what it says. Right? There's no metaphor here. It's just that, right, you have to figure out what it says. Four, is achilek ha-revi'i shomer ato b'firut tzukim al derech machmadei shir. The fourth is things that are aesthetically beautiful. Drushot amsukim that are just meant to be nice. They're nice. Machmad Deshir. It's like a song. It's like a poem. What? Yes, they're meant to be nice. Like beautiful. Like, you know, it sounds good. It's a word. It makes you feel good. It's a shavar brachos. Like, it's nice. Yes, there are things that are just meant to be nice. Right? He says, not nice, but not true. Right? Nice, but not true. Look, he says, lo mivnei shomrim omram ha'emim ki inyan ha'pasuk inyan ha'drashahu. Not because the person who said it thought that was pshat ha'pasuk. He didn't. Chalil ha'machat. God forbid that's what he thought. Hu ma'asram ruzal mikra l'chud. Right? That's when they say the pasuk means this. And I'm just giving a drasha. Example. Amar of Yochanan. Ma'i dechziv aser ta'aser, aser b'shil shetit asher. When it says aser ta'aser, you shall surely tithe. What do Chazal say? Give tithe so that you become rich. Or another example, v'harikotim lachem bracha ad lidai. I will give you bracha until belidai, which Chazal say, ad yivlu tiftotechem ilamardai. I will give you good until your mouth like falls apart from saying, enough, enough, I have enough money, I have enough good, I'm healthy enough, right? He's like, it's a upshot, but it's nice. It's a heart. It's a drasha, it's shamshurisara. It's very nice. It's inspirational. That's what it's supposed to be. Don't get too caught up with it. Right? He says, below yala tachash called drasha pasuk bin apsukim kasher yamin. Misho gil adara mitit shomrim shizak kabbalah biyadam. Please. He's like, don't think that it's true. Right? Feel the head on your shoulders. Please. Do not think that's what the pasuk meant. It's not. It's a word. It's nice. I know this is terrible, right? Just aesthetic, right? I know people like read this. Really, the Ravam and Ravam said that some of the stuff in Gemara is just like words that are supposed to make you feel good. Yes, yes. That's what he said. Some of it. That's what it is. I don't know what you want from me, right? This is not a fundamental of faith. It's not a halacha. He says, sometimes it's what they actually thought. Sometimes it is what they thought. And sometimes they were like, hey, this is a great word. It's a pun. It's beautiful. It's really nice. It will make people smile. Right? Yeah, the Hamiletic. I mean, it's not Shabbat of Sukkot. That doesn't mean the idea they're saying isn't true. Right? Meaning, when you say that God will give you a lot, right? And you say it poetically, that your mouth will stop, you won't even have the energy to say enough of it already, right? Everyone understands what you mean, which is God is going to shower you with blessings, which itself is a metaphor, right? The English is a metaphor also. It's not that the idea is false, but like, it wasn't meant to be a drasha. They're saying something nice, they're attaching a nice idea to a pasuk. Is that shot? No. It's nice, it's a word.
How is that any different from metaphorical?
Because it's not metaphorical. He's saying, it makes you feel good. It's attaching a nice idea to a pasuk. Don't get too wrapped up in this. It's not a deep philosophical idea, right? It's not, right? What was his example? Pointing to God, understanding God's essence. That's like deep metaphorical philosophical truth. This is, right? This is like someone coming, this is like I have friends, right? That they started dating in high school, right? And his name, they dated for 7 years, okay? And his name is Yaakov, and her name is Rachel. Okay? So at their engagement party, they put up the pasuk of... No! When Yaakov says, I worked for 7 years for your daughter Rachel, right? No one thinks that's what the pasuk means, but everyone laughs. Because they dated for 7 years. His name was Yaakov, her name was Rachel, right? Okay? There's not some deep philosophical meaning in that. Right? Right? It was very nice. It was very cute. It made everyone feel good. I was like, what do you want from me? Right? He's like, there are things like that. Rabbi Lamb has an article called The Unapologetic Darsha. Right? He's like, listen. I'm not going to apologize. Right? The whole he writes this article about how drasha are important. It's where you're trying to teach people things and you're trying to make it beautiful. Because if you just speak, right? If you just say, "I am going to inspire you," right? It doesn't work. But if you tell jokes and you tell stories and it's and you speak beautifully and inspirationally, and you have a melodic voice, and you're, you know, Chief Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, right? And you have a, you know, you have an Oxbridge accent. So suddenly, the simplest of ideas, right, penetrate the depths of your heart. I mean, that's valuable. It really is, right? People are cynical about this, but it really is, right? It just is, right? And don't tell me it's not pshat. I know it's not pshat, right? That's not the point, right? What? Yeah, well, look at the last paragraph in this, which is even more shocking. And he says, the karov liyot, he says, it's almost, ki rov hadrashot hanitsaot b'divrehem zal hemizeh achelet. He says, he thinks that most things that Chazal said are this. Again, it doesn't mean there aren't ideas there, but it means that it's not necessarily what the pasuk means. It's not like there's some deep secret. This is what the pasuk means. It's nice. There are important ideas, right? But just as an important idea, and quote the pasuk, doesn't mean that there's like a deep shot. Oh, it really emerged from the pasuk. No! His language was Torah, right? It's the way that people who really like sports, everything is a sports metaphor, right? So people who really like Torah, everything is a Torah metaphor. Everything you pull a pasuk. Everything. What's wrong with that, right? What's wrong with that? You say important things, you attach to the pasukim. Sometimes it's nominally connected to the pasuk, sometimes more. But the point is, the reason you attach to the pasuk is because it's nice, and it's beautiful, and it's meaningful, and it sounds good, and it makes people, it inspires them. That's okay. That's good. Right? It's not bad. What's shocking is his last paragraph, which is that he's like, most of what Chazal said in Drashot is that. I mean, that's quite a statement. That's quite a packed statement there. I don't know if I'd go that far, right? But it's definitely true that some of the things in Chazal, like you read it and you're like, oh, it's so nice. It's just so nice. It just makes, like, it's just beautiful, right? It's beautiful. It's inspirational, right? And that's what it's meant to be. Don't be afraid to say there's value and inspiration. Fine. Fifth category, and don't worry, we're not done, because this is the fifth category of the non-narratives. Right? Then he's going to do four types of stories. We've only gone halfway through. Okay? The fifth is Havai. What's Havai? Things that are wrong. They're vanity. They're meaningless nothingness. Right? They're not meaningful. Right? And he gives you an example from Psachim. Omar Marzutra Meitel Al Eitel Hutaun Arba Meagamle, right? Meitel, he carries 400 donkey camels. Darag Eitel Rishon Hirosh Pasuk. Hirosha Pasuk, Vachon Asof Pasuk, Ula Eitel Shishabanim, Be'elish Motam, right? It goes on. Anyway, he goes into what people have to understand. But if you look at this sort of line, he says, Kaloi Zachem and I, Koba Yashi, Drash, on the Krakula Masa, Arba, Meot, Gamle, he says, there's no way that on this pasuk he has 400 camels worth of drashot, culture can't asnev sukim. He's like, it's just, it's things that are meaningless or exaggerations. They're just like, okay? So here's his five categories of non-narratives so far, right? What are they? Things that mean exactly what they say and are easy to understand. Things that do not mean what they say at all. They're only metaphorical. Things that mean what they say, but they are difficult, right? They mean what they say, but you have to understand them, right? The four are the things that are nice, right? They're nice. They're beautiful. They're inspirational. And there are ideas there, but that's not the point. The point of the tactic, right? They're not shot. They're not trying to be. And the fifth are things that are just whatever, exaggerations, meaningless, whatever, right? Sometimes, like, they're jokes. I don't know. Yes, I don't think he thinks it's no different. I think it's right. The fourth one at least has an idea, right? It's just that it's not attached to the pasuk. It's some idea. It's not a drasha. It's not, you don't have to like figure out how it emerged from the pasuk. But it's like it's an idea. It's nice. Like Aser Bishvil Shetit Asher is like, if you give tzedaka, you'll be rewarded. I mean, the idea is, right? Whether or not it comes from the pasuk, the idea is like more or less true, right? The fifth category is just like, you know. Yeah, like the good example would be that one, right? Like Ellie mentioned it, whatever it was, yesterday, today, right? Where he said, right, his students were falling asleep in shiur, and in order to wake them up, he just said, why did Esther get to rule over 127 provinces? Because she's descended from Sarah, who was 127, right? She died. Yes, that the Gemara says the purpose of that was to wake people up. He was saying something that was so obviously ridiculous that it would shake people up. Right? That was all. That was the entire point. That was it. He said there are things, not that much. Right? He thinks most of the drashot that you get in Chazal are poetic. Right? They're not meant to be shot. They have an idea, but the idea is to inspire. And right? It's not that they're meaningless. He said some things are mamish meaningless. Right? He said most things aren't meaningless, but that doesn't mean they're shot. Okay? But that's section one. This is like drashot of Sukkot. But then he moves to the second type of Agadah, which is the stories. He says, okay, well, how do you understand the story side of Agadah? So here he divides it into four categories, okay? Category one, Hamaaseh shetilmod mimenu toelet bedinei. Right, this one, I don't even have to give you examples, but he said sometimes a story is not an Agadah. What's a story? It's a halachic story, right? So you all know this, right? You've all seen this, right? I assume you've all read the Gemara where sometimes there are stories. They're not what we call stories. They're like, right? Like, you know, the Mishnah and Sukkah. I once went to that Sukkah, and look, no one said anything, even though it was, right? His table, right? The Machlok Be'el Be'shamah, even though his table was outside the Sukkah, doesn't that contradict the halacha of Be'shamah that you don't have, right? And then they say, no! But that type of story... Right, of course. Right, so he said there are many stories like that in Chazal, and that's not what we normally talk about as an Agadah, right? That's a Maiserah. That's a story that supports a halacha. Right, that's easy. Okay, no explanation needed for that. Fine. Category one. Category two, Maaseh she'nolmod toelet b'midot v'deot. Second type are stories that are supposed to teach you character traits. Example, classic example, I don't even have to read it to you. He doesn't even give you the whole thing. He tells you the story. He hints at it, which is, all the stories about Hillel and Shammai, about Hillel had a cool temper, and Shammai didn't, right? The guy came to Hillel and said, teach me the whole Torah on one foot. Shammai kicked him out, and Hillel brought him under Kambashina. What is the point of that story? It's not really complicated. What's the point of the story? Be like Hillel, right? Don't have a temper, right? And then you'll bring people closer to Judaism, right? So he said, first type of story, halachic. Second, ethical, right? Character stories, great. Third, hamaaseh shenilmad mimenu meikarei emunah. The third type are the stories that teach you theological lessons. Right? So for example, in this one, he talks about all those stories in the Gemara about the people who davened for rain and got it. Right? Where the purpose of telling that story are God provides parnasa, right? Whether you, again, do you have to take them exactly literally? Not necessarily. But what's the point of that story? To teach you that prayer is effective, right? And that's the point of the story. Right? Fourth one. Ma'asiyot shenichtavu mipnei she'ira b'hem devar pela v'inyan tema. Some sort of religious idea, right? Stories about the effectiveness of prayer. Why do you tell me that story? To tell you that prayer is effective. That's why you tell me that, right? So there are stories that teach you halacha. There are stories that teach you midot. There are stories that teach you religious truths. And the fourth are, sometimes, he says, right? Again, he says, sometimes they teach you about miracles that happen because they happen. Right? Remember, he said at the beginning, you don't have to believe that every story in the Gemara and every miracle in the Gemara happens. What do you have? But that doesn't mean they never happen. Right? Just because they didn't always happen doesn't mean they never happen. So he said, sometimes, sometimes they tell you a story because a miracle really did happen.
Well, why isn't that a good
contact? What? So why? So again, it sounds like for him, like that's valuable. It's sort of related to the third one, right? But it's not directly teaching a particular theological lesson. Like sometimes miraculous things happen and you're supposed to know about it. Obviously, they carry theological lessons with it, but you can see how that's different from other stories. Again, it's similar, but yes, he's trying to categorize it. But I don't think it's like, oh, is that similar to the third one? Yes, but...
Just because something real or not, doesn't mean we'll call it any of the...
No, correct. Correct, but again, he's telling you what to look for. Oh. Right? He's categorizing. He's telling you what to look for. Fine. That's the first four types of stories. Then he said there's another group of stories. Right? He really subdivides everything. This is why it's helpful, Ma'amar. Next category are the stories that never happened. They happened in a dream. Yeah, so for example, he assumes that the Gemara in Bracha Dav Zayin, we'll see, Dav Zayin, I think so, right, where Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, this was made into an Avram Fried song. Why? I'm not exactly sure why of all things he made this into a song, right? But the song is called Tanya. You ever heard it? It's a very old Avram Fried song, which at some point someone was like, hey, this is an Avram Fried song. I'm like, I don't believe you. I don't believe you. But yeah, it's Tanya, and he makes this long song about Omer Yishmael ben Elisha. Pam achni nechrasi lahakir ktoret lefnai v'lefnin. The Kohen Gadol says that I once went to bring the ktoret in front of God, and God said to me, bless me. And I said, why should I bless you? I'm a human being. And God said, no, I want you to bless me. So he says, okay, it should be your will that your mercy should conquer your anger. And God nodded his head in agreement. Okay? This is a Gemara, and he says, that's what we call a dream. That is a dream that he had. And he says, there are many dreams like this in Chazal. Now, why would you tell me this? Right, so he says sometimes, right, it could be that there's a lesson here, but he says, why am I telling you certain things are dreams? Because sometimes you think things sound crazy. And he's like, it was. Right, so he looks, he says, example, look at the second line in the next paragraph, because this is going to explain a lot of Masechet Brachot to you. Tomo ma'asiot zachru bem shadim. You know, he's like, all those stories with demons. Please don't think that happened.
No.
Right? And apparently it was just the way of the sages that sometimes, I don't know, they came to the Beit Midrash and it's like, you will not believe the dream I had last night. We took Chatuli, and it helped me see demons. I mean, right, like, okay. Right? That one happened, but the rest, okay? Fine. Next one are, again, stories that are just Divrei Havai. They're just like exaggerations. They don't really mean anything. They just, whatever. That's crazy. That's not what you want from me, right? What's his example? Reb Zera shechting, Rava and Reb Zera shechting each other right on Purim when they were drunk. He's like, that didn't happen. I don't know what's going on there, but it didn't happen. Right? That's not how it went. Right? He's like, I mean, something happened. They got angry and they hit each other maybe. I don't know. But it's just not what it sounds like. It doesn't take it too seriously. Okay? Next category are true stories. But, nevertheless, despite the fact they're true, the Gemara tells them to you as a parable. Right? Hey, ma'asiyot she'iru be'emet, ela she'dibru otam b'tavnit mashal v'chida. Be'ilu nitbonein, sh'lon b'erin yanem v'chol adam v'chololov. Ay, k'shunim b'shirat ma'asah ha'cham v'navon yivineu v'yeda kavanato v'yirev b'pshat ma'asiyot mechel kaseh. That this is the one that are the hardest to understand. It's the ones where there's a real truth there, maybe even something real that happened. But Chazal purposely hid it in a mashal, so the average person can't get it. Right? Because they want you to try to understand. And only the type of person who will write this is what the Rambam says. Right? Certain things are written esoterically. Right? Either it says, Varmachrim sheminiyat nikar afilu lepeti vikata. Mikre lefi sheminiyat varam elu binyam pshuta la'amin adrasha hu api pshuta. Right, so that people really understand the world will parse the mashal. Right, and he says, how can you tell when it's this type of story? When the story as it's written is obviously wrong. So he brings the example of Shlomo having a conversation with the Malach HaMavet. Right? And he says, "Hinei pshata maaseh nimnam niyag gemura l'chol baal seichel bina." Anyone who has any wisdom will know that it can't be literal. V'inyano l'fi anere b'inayin einayu davari rabbe amet. But there must be some sort of story behind it. Ratzel omar, ki shnei ala noda l'shlomo geolchim b'derech al aret. He realized that people were dying because they were sick. Right? Not the Malach HaMoved told them he were sick and he tried to, but he saw people who were getting older. He realized they were coming close to death. And then we personify it in the Malach HaMoved. And the Gemara tells about all the ways that Shlomo tried to save them, right? And what it's really telling you is what probably happened was he had people who were sick that he was close to, that he knew, and he wanted to try to save them. And it didn't work, because it doesn't always work, right? Death is inevitable.
Especially in the whatever
PCE. Yeah, but like, but and this is not crazy, right? It's like Harry Potter, right? Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, right? It's a story of the Deathly Hallows, of the people who tried to evade death, and it didn't work, right? Okay, maybe it started with a real story of people who thought they could evade death, and this is how, whatever, right? And that happened. And then the next paragraph, he says, don't be surprised. This is a lot of that. Right? This is like, right? Chazal loved it. The Pesukim need love, mashal, right? It's everyone. And everyone understands that it's not the Pesach. And now, he gets to this and he says, my father in the Perush HaMishnah, when he was talking about Agadata, this is, now we've gotten to the category he was really talking about. This, right, is what we're really talking about, where you have to understand the deeper meaning.
That's true.
Yeah. And then he says, and there are things that are not literal, so you got to pay attention, you got to figure it out. And he says, and he said, this is similar to the second category of the drushot that are purely metaphorical. Right? What? So remember, he divided by drushot that are non-narrative and drushot that are narrative. So the second category of non-narrative drushot were those that are only metaphorical. Right?
Yeah, true.
Meaning they're based on truth, but the outer shell is just a way of getting at the inner meaning. But the only thing that matters is the inner meaning, right? And now he notes that it's not always easy to figure this out, right? Sometimes it's hard to figure out, right? You could have a drasha where it might be literal, it might not be, right? Meaning, you look at it, it could be. I'm not married to saying it's literal, but it could be. It doesn't not make sense. And then the last category is what he calls drashot murkavot, right? Which are drashot that have a little bit of everything in it, right? I have more than one thing going on. Parts of it are literal, parts of it are not, parts of it are metaphorical. Okay, right? And then he says, right, basically this is his summary to help you understand the Agadah and not go crazy. So let's just summarize it, right? Like I said, I'm just going to run through it and overview it. So what does he say? So let's review. There's non-narrative drashot and there's narrative drashot, right? Or Agadah. Non-narrative, he divides into five categories, right? Those that are completely pshat. They mean what they say. Those that are only metaphorical, and what you have to understand is the deeper meaning. Things that mean what they say, but they're complicated, right? Then, second, make sure I got it good right here. Right? The fourth are those that are nice, right? Drashot, courts. Right, which he says when it comes to drasha, that's what it means, right? They have an idea, but they're not shot in the pasuk. And then things that are just havai, exaggerations, they don't make sense, they're jokes, whatever. Okay? That's the non-narrative. And then he said there are stories in Gemara. What type of stories are there? So category one, halachic stories. Category two, stories that teach you ethics. Category three, stories that teach you theological lessons. Category number four, things that teach you about miracles that actually happen. Right? Then he said there are stories that are recorded that are dreams. Maybe they have lessons, maybe they don't. Right? And then stories that have deep philosophical meanings that where there might be historical, no, sorry, that's the fourth one. The ones that happen, but right, they're totally exaggerated in Chazal and you shouldn't take them seriously. Right? And then the last category, right, meaning there isn't a deep meaning, that it's just sort of. And then the ones where there's a true core, maybe even a true narrative behind it, but the way it's written is a mashal. Now, bringing us back to the Rambam, when the Rambam says there are three types of people in the approach to Agadah, that's not true of all Agadot, right? Of all the different types of Agadah that he listed, right, which are five types of non-narrative agadot, then four types of stories, plus the dream stories, plus the exaggerated stories, plus the real stories, right? So I don't know why he exactly categorized that way. So seven types of stories and five types of drashot, right? Of those, how many of them fit into the Rambam's rules of the types of drashot that people don't understand and think are literal but aren't? Two, right? Two out of 12. Right? The second category of the non-narrative. And the fourth category, some of them touch, right, might be. Right, the dreams might, right? You're right, you're right. Meaning there are two, right, okay, you're right. Well, let's put it differently. The Rambam, when the Rambam says that the wisest people understand that it's true but not literal,
right,
that's only two of 12,
yeah.
Right? But even though the Rambam screams and yells about things that are literal, right, according to Rambam and Rambam, certain psukim are just exactly as they are, one and three, things that are simple and things that are complicated, but exactly what they say, right? Plus the first three types of stories. The first four types of stories,
right?
The stories that happen and teach you halacha, the stories that happen and teach you ethics, the story that happen and teach you theological lessons, the story that teach you miracles, right? Rav Amram and Rambam doesn't say, right, he doesn't think you believe every miracle, that's how he starts the whole thing.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you deny all miracles, right? So what's important about Rav Amram and Rambam is the Rambam says to take everything literally is crazy, to take it, right, to not realize it's metaphor, that's what you're supposed to do. To be cynical and reject things, that's evil. But according to Rav Amram and Rambam, look, there are things which are supposed to take literally. There are a few types which are supposed to be meant metaphorically. And there are some things where you really don't have to accept it. Right? So what you realize is that what Rav Amram and Rambam is telling you within his father is that the types of things where we insist that you understand things metaphorically, that it's not literal, but there's truth there, that's a very small amount of Agadah. There is a lot of Agadah, which at the end of the day, there's nothing wrong with taking literally, and there's a certain amount of Agadah, which there's nothing wrong in rejecting, right? So we shouldn't over, and this is, right, this is exactly Yonatan's point last week, or 2 weeks ago, right, which is, whenever it was, before Ben Hazmanah,
yeah.
Right, is that just because you say that a wise person will look at certain things and take it metaphorically doesn't mean that everything is metaphorical.
Right.
Some things are literal, and that's fine because they make sense. And some things just don't make sense, and that's also fine. The key is to realize that the most important agados, right, are that category that hide important lessons,
right,
and need to be deciphered. But that's not all of agadah.
Right, right.
Right? That's the key. Right? So understand that these are the most important drashot, but by no stretch of the imagination are they most.
This, okay, I'm from Interrupt.
No. Right, and as you see, right, some of them he are convinced in one category end up in the opposite category.
Yeah.
And Malasha. But I hope, what? What? Because those are the ones that hide such ideas that they couldn't be spoon-fed to you. They gave it to you in such a way that you have to
find a vague inner truth.
Yeah, that's esoteric truth. That's exactly it. That the deepest things are hidden that way. Okay, so hopefully we'll end, I think, our introduction to Agadah with this. And with this, now we can start looking at Agadah, where we don't have to jump and say it's not literal, it is literal, right? We'll have the tools to try to understand it. Yeah? Go, 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 Sikha. Go, go, go.